This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website at progressive.org. Today we're going to be talking about Iran, and more particularly, the obligation of liberals and leftists in the United States toward the democracy movement in Iran. With me to talk about this is Danny Postal, a senior editor at Open Democracy and author of a new little book, interesting, provocative, called Reading Legitimation Crisis in Tehran, Iran and the Future of Liberalism. Danny Postal, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
What is your group, Open Democracy?
Well, it's more of a magazine, really, although it often does give the impression that it's an NGO or a movement or an organization. But it's an online magazine, something like Slate or Salon, founded opendemocracy.net. It was founded by Anthony Barnett. It's a London-based magazine. Anthony was involved for many years with the New Left Review, and then started an organization called Charter 88, a movement to establish a democratic constitution in Britain. And then in 2000, 2001, Anthony and some of his colleagues in London put together this website, and the idea is to have a really global dialogue and debate about the key issues facing us in the world today. And although it doesn't have an exact political line, I like to say that its center of gravity is decidedly left of center.
And how'd you arrive there?
Basically, my friend Todd Gitlin, he spent a semester or a year in London and met Anthony just as they were starting Open Democracy. Todd came back to New York and was very enthusiastic and got in touch with a bunch of his friends to say, you have to pay attention to this. And one thing led to another, and I started doing a little couple of pieces for them, and finally they brought me on full time.
What spurred you to do this book on Iran?
I've, for the last several years, been observing developments in Iran with intense interest, not only political developments, but more particularly intellectual and philosophical developments. I was struck, and I should say my academic background is in philosophy and political theory, so I was struck by the intense interest amongst Iranian, not only Iranian philosophers and scholars, but journalists, human rights activists, bloggers, in political philosophers who we tend to sort of take for granted in the West. They're just sort of there as part of the pantheon of our thought. And in Iran, people like Jürgen Habermas, Isaiah Berlin, Hannah Arendt, Richard Rorty, these people have an enormous following. The philosopher Ramin Jahanbegloo, the Iranian thinker, describes what he calls a renaissance of liberalism happening in Iran today. And he himself has been responsible for bringing a great number of Western thinkers to lecture in Tehran.
Well, what is the appeal of this modern liberal philosophy in Iran?
I think the appeal is essentially that these ideas, ideas about secularism, the separation of religion and the state, what Isaiah Berlin called value pluralism, liberal democracy, freedom of expression, the key principles of liberal democratic theory are not things that Iranians can just take for granted the way we sometimes do in the West. These are things that actually have to be struggled for. And this goes back to a key concept in Hannah Arendt's political philosophy, that rights are things that you have to claim. They're not just there waiting for you to pluck them. You actually have to struggle for them. You have to claim them. Sometimes you have to die to fight for these things, to achieve them. And in Iran, what's so striking is precisely that there's this struggle for things that we in the West either take for granted or even associate with ugly, reactionary kinds of politics.
And that's because we hear Bush champion some of those things rhetorically.
That's right. And I think this actually confuses a lot of people on the left who say, well, what's so exciting about Isaiah Berlin and Karl Popper? What are Iranians getting so worked up about? I mean, aren't Bush and the neocons really championing some of those same principles? My answer to that is to say, only on the surface. I would actually argue that Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and company represent not liberalism, but a corrupted and disfigured and deeply cynical smokescreen of liberalism, while at the same time pursuing policies that in fact undermine and destroy the best aspects of liberal democratic politics.
Do you put a label on their practice of politics?
Well, I think it's a kind of neo-realpolitik, pure and simple. I mean, for all of the bloated rhetoric of the neocons about democracy and freedom, what you find when you look closely at the neocon project is actually a deeply cynical commitment to power. If there's one word I think that describes their politics, it's power. And the things that appeal to Iranian human rights activists and liberal intellectuals about liberal democratic political philosophy, it's not about power in that sense. It's about human rights, pluralism, freedom of expression.
You mentioned the Iranian philosopher Ramin Jahanbegloo. He has a line in this book of yours, Danny Postal, Reading Legitimation Crisis in Tehran, that struck me. He said, there's nothing left of the left in Iran. What did he mean by that?
Well, what Ramin meant by that is that the left in the 1960s and 70s in Iran was essentially the revolutionary Marxist left. There were different shades of that revolutionary Marxism. There were more Maoist types. There were more pro-Moscow Communist Party types. There were some urban guerrillas. But the fact is that to be on the left, broadly speaking, in the Iran of the 1960s and 70s, meant that you were a revolutionary Marxist of one sort or another. And that project, to cut a very long and complicated story short, was a disaster. In the sense that, well, it's been a disaster in two ways. One is that once the Islamists consolidated power in Iran in 1979, 80, and particularly 81, they decimated the revolutionary Marxist left. They either simply murdered anyone associated with those movements or threw them in prison.
And some of them had tragically supported the clerical uprising.
Well, indeed, it's key to remember that the revolution in Iran in 1978 and 79, Matt, although it became known as the Islamic Revolution, it was actually a very broad-based coalition of forces that helped topple the Shah. It was the Islamists, but it was also revolutionary Marxists, it was liberals, it was feminists, it was all sorts of secular types, nationalists. But in the end, it was the Islamists who had the brutal capacity to force out the rest. Some use the metaphor that they used the left as a ladder that they climbed up and then kicked it out from underneath. But that's even putting it a bit euphemistically, because the fact is they destroyed the ladder. So the story of the Iranian left is sad and tragic in that sense, that they were destroyed ultimately, and the few survivors were driven into exile. But it's also the case that the revolutionary left, the Marxist left in Iran, participated in the very process that helped destroy them. Fred Halliday says that they helped construct the noose by which they were hung by the Islamists, which is to say, in a nutshell, that they, at their worst, agreed with the Islamists. For all of their differences with the Islamists, they agreed about the bourgeois, European, colonial nature of things like democracy and human rights. And so at those key moments when questions of freedom of expression came up, women's rights came up, they agreed with the Islamists that there should be, what they said, death to liberalism, that these were bourgeois notions. They didn't support those things at the time. And in that sense, they discredited themselves.
I'm speaking with Danny Postal, who's the author of a challenging new book called Reading Legitimation Crisis in Tehran, Iran, and the Future of Liberalism. The people who are fighting for democracy and human rights and liberal values in Iran have what this philosopher called an anti-utopian vision. And it's unclear to me exactly what he was referring to. Is it anti-utopian in the way that it's the anti-Marxist utopian? Is it anti-utopian in opposition to the Islamic ideal utopia? Or is it both?
It's both, definitely. And even beyond that, I think there's a deep-seated suspicion of utopian motifs amongst Iranian progressives because of the experiences of the 1978-79 revolution, which involved, avowedly utopian movements and ideas, whether in their Islamist or Marxist-Leninist varieties, both of which turned out to be rather dystopian in many ways. And so rather than propose an alternative utopian scheme or set of ideals, there's a tendency to be suspicious of utopianism, which doesn't mean that there's a kind of defeatist or pessimistic politics amongst Iranian progressives, Matt. I think it just means that there's a tendency to see politics as what Hannah Arendt called the art of the possible. They don't want revolution anymore, largely, broadly speaking. You don't hear even the most vociferous critics of the current regime call for a revolutionary overthrow of the Iranian state. What they're talking about is bringing about a nonviolent transformation, reconstruction, in a way that would be more like reformism, what we would call reformist politics rather than revolutionary politics.
Danny Postol, a big part of this book is actually a broadside against the American left. Do you want to give your criticism? I think it's overly broad, actually.
But, sure.
So I want you to articulate it, then I'll talk about it.
Well, I should say, I don't think of my critique as being a critique of the left in general. I think of my critique as being directed towards particular wings of the left, which I think have grown in influence, especially over the last 4 years. I would say, Matt, that my critique of the left comes down to this. There's been a tendency to be confused about the Iranian story in sectors of the left for a couple of reasons. One is the anti-imperialist rhetoric of Ahmadinejad in particular and of other members and aspects of the ruling elite in Iran. When they denounce American imperialism and U.S. hegemony, that sounds somehow like the language of the anti-imperialist left, and so there's a tendency to say, well, wait a minute, this is a little bit confusing. It scrambles our compasses a little bit. When Hugo Chavez in Venezuela embraces Ahmadinejad, as he has done, as a revolutionary brother and comrade, this tends to confuse people on the left.
Well, what do you think about the left's fascination with Chavez?
Well, I mean, I think that's a complicated story. I am neither prepared to simply dismiss Chavez or to uncritically embrace him. I think that he's done a lot of great things.
But his dance with Ahmadinejad has got to be disturbing to those of us who recognize Ahmadinejad's right-wing fundamentalism and anti-Semitism.
Deeply disturbing, and in fact, it's deeply disturbing to a lot of Iranians, who some of whom actually admire Chavez for the Bolivarian Revolution and the progressive things Chavez has done, but who are appalled by his embrace of Ahmadinejad. And it should be clear that although there are perfectly pragmatic and reasonable reasons for Venezuela and Iran to have this kind of relationship that they've developed, which goes back actually quite a ways. They were two founding members of OPEC. They have all sorts of geostrategic and economic reasons to join forces, especially in this age of George Bush and American hegemony. But that's not what Chavez is saying. He's going way beyond that. He's saying, this is my revolutionary brother. That's totally over the top. That has nothing to do with the pragmatic reasons for their alliance. So that's disturbing and confusing to a lot of people on the left. Then there's what I call the gag rule. There are a lot of people on the left who think, and I've just had this debate literally yesterday with a couple of progressives, who feel that we shouldn't say anything critical of the Iranian government, because that would feed the fires of warmongering and imperialism. It could only help somehow. It would be used by the neocons to make their case for toppling the regime in Tehran.
Well, you can see their point, though.
One can see the point. But this is what I would say in response. Shirin Ebadi, actually, the Iranian human rights lawyer who won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2003 and who has been interviewed in your magazine, The Progressive, was confronted by exactly this argument in London last spring. An anti-war activist said to her, "Why do you denounce the regime in Tehran when this could only help fuel the fires of imperialism?" And she upbraided this young anti-war activist and said, "I don't need to be lectured about the human rights situation and what I should say about it in my country. Any anti-war movement that suggests that I should silence myself in the face of tyranny can count me out." And we certainly don't want to count Shirin Ebadi out of any anti-war movement, Matt. On the contrary, we need to be in dialogue. This is the argument of my book, ultimately. We progressives and internationalists should be in dialogue and deep solidarity with forces of pluralism, human rights, and democratic activism in Iran today. I do not believe for a second that our support for them helps the neocons. And in fact, the neocons have now forfeited. A lot of people on the left don't understand this. The neocons have no legitimate claims whatsoever to speak on behalf of the Iranian dissident movement.
In fact, the dissident movement is quite clear that it's against a U.S. bombing or invasion.
Completely and unambiguously against any U.S. attack on their country. And they want nothing to do with the neocons. When Condi Rice made $75 million available for quote-unquote democratic opposition movements in Iran, guess what happened to that money? It's been sitting around collecting dust. It met with a resounding thud. The Iranian progressive movement has no illusions about the nature of the neocon agenda.
Also, they have no illusions about what the consequence of a U.S. bombing would be, because it would completely take the rug right out from under them, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And in fact, not only would the very first bomb that fell on Iran derail the democratic movement in Iran, Matt, but the very threats coming from Washington today serve to strengthen the most repressive and reactionary forces in Iran. When Ahmadinejad closes human rights organizations, bans newspapers, puts Shirin Ebadi on watch that her organization is going to be shut down, and the like, when dissidents and bloggers and journalists are thrown in jail, when Ramin Jahanbegloo is put in solitary confinement, these things are actually justified by the regime in the name of these external threats.
Now, my point about being overbroad, though, is that there are a lot of leftist intellectuals, leading ones in this country, who signed petitions against the imprisonment of that philosopher, signed petitions against the repression against trade unionists.
Including yourself, Matt.
And a lot of people with more clout than I have.
And I'm proud to say that I actually personally approached many of those people, as you know, to sign the petition on behalf of Ramin Jahanbegloo. And Joanne Landy's organization, the Campaign for Peace and Democracy, has done an outstanding job of making it clear that many people on the left oppose both U.S. aggression and theocratic repression in Iran. There's no question, and perhaps I've overstated my case partly intentionally to get an argument going,
right,
Matt.
No,
I understand. Think that there's some confusion on the left, and there's a tendency to drag one's feet about actively standing in solidarity with democratic dissidents in Iran. And I'd just like to get some of these issues out on the table to debate them, but not just purely as an intellectual parlor game, but because Iranian dissidents are asking for our support. We should be doing profiles of them, making documentary films about them, bringing them to U.S. universities to lecture, because it is we, as anti-war activists and progressive internationalists, who stand in solidarity with them, particularly on this question, what I call the mother of all issues, which is a U.S. attack on Iran. We are the ones. The neocons have come out of the closet now as supporters of a U.S. attack on Iran. Many of them have. And so they are totally out of whack.
Ostensibly on behalf of the Iranian people, of course.
Completely bogus, nonsensical claim, which unfortunately many people on the left have bought. There are people on the left, Matt, who will say, well, I don't want to get involved with the Iranian dissident movement because they're on the payroll of the CIA and they're in bed with the neocons. Nonsense. We need to be very clear that is not true. And in fact, it is we who stand in solidarity with the people of Iran, with the democratic and human rights struggles in Iran today, particularly on this question of whether the U.S. should attack them. And so we need to get very clear about it is us, it is our position that is in sync with the Iranians on that.
You're listening to Danny Postol, who's the author of Reading Legitimation Crisis in Tehran, Iran and the Future of Liberalism. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. You write in the beginning of this book, Danny Postol, that you say a U.S. bombing attack on Iran or invasion is unlikely. I've been on the other side of that for a long time, thinking that Bush is crazy enough to do this and will, in fact, do it before he leaves office. Why do you think it's unlikely?
Well, I should say that I wrote those words in August of last year, 2006. It is now just about March of 2007. And in the intervening months, no pun intended, I would say things are looking different, much more ominous. A threatening storm is gathering in Washington. And I still think that the chances, the odds are against it, but I think we should be prepared for the worst. I think we should assume that, in fact, an attack is on the horizon and mobilize very, very passionately and aggressively against one.
Why do you think they would do it if they do it?
Well, like you say, did you use the word crazy? I mean, we're not in a rational universe. You would assume that with the unqualified debacle in Iraq and the Republicans getting a swift kick in the behind in the midterm elections, Rumsfeld's head rolling, things looking the way they do in the Middle East and in the world more broadly, you would think that the Iran option is completely off the table. And yet, as Seymour Hersh and others have pointed out, it might be precisely this endgame scenario that Cheney in particular, I think it's really about Cheney in the end, I think these guys are saying, look, the Democrats are probably going to win in 2008. Maybe they'll get reelected in 2012. God knows, even 2016. And the Republicans might be out of power and unable to do Iran for a good long time for the foreseeable future. This might be their last chance. So I think we should actually assume that there is a psychopathology of power and simply a mad kind of streak that is unpredictable. Why they would do it? I mean, you talk to professors of international relations, and they would say there's absolutely no reason to do it. Maybe Israel wants them to do it. I mean, clearly Netanyahu and the Likud party in Israel has been pushing for this. Any realist, talk to John Mearsheimer, and they'll tell you that this is insane. It would be a huge blowback to U.S. interests, and yet we can't assume that we live in a rational universe when it comes to these people.
So what do you think we should do?
I think that we should very passionately and proactively advocate against any U.S. military strike on Iran. There are so many reasons why not to do it. Obviously, the humanitarian and geopolitical catastrophe that would ensue is undebatable. But one of the arguments that I think we progressives are in a particularly good position to make about this, Matt, is that something we touched on earlier, the democratic and human rights struggle in Iran today, which has actually been growing and picking up momentum over the last several years, would be derailed, possibly destroyed, by even one bomb dropping on Iran. And I think we need to make that case loud and clear. I think the Democrats in Congress, and I've been in dialogue with some of them, need to actually not wait like in Iraq and react to what the Republicans are doing. They need to go in right now, and some of them are starting to, and actually hold hearings on the fact that it's even being discussed.
I know John Murtha was doing that. On the other hand, you have people like Hillary Clinton and Obama himself who have been very hawkish on Iran, and John Edwards too.
Yeah, Obama has had mixed things to say about Iran. I don't think he's studied it closely, to be honest, but obviously he's going to have to now that he's running for president.
I think both Hillary and Edwards have said, can't take anything off the table, which is exactly what Bush says.
I wasn't surprised in the least when Hillary said that, and she's simply awful on this issue. Edwards, I was a bit surprised to hear that, actually. and very disappointed. But I think, I mean, Obama is my senator in Illinois, and I know people who work with him, and I'm going to do everything I can to get this case on his table. I want Obama to know, for example, I want all Democrats to know that the Democratic dissident and human rights movements in Iran are absolutely against not only any U.S. attack on their country, but even the threat of a U.S. attack, which puts them in an extremely perilous situation. Obama needs to know that. I don't know if he does or not.
Do you have a sense as to how Obama can be reached on this? I mean, the guy's running for president. How can he even get to him?
Well, he's running for president, but I mean, I know a couple of people in his office. But more importantly, anybody running for president has to bone up on these things. I mean, you can't run for president and not know, you know, not have a position on Iran. I do know that Obama is actually looking for advisors on Iran and is studying the issue closely. We, progressives and internationalists, should actually take that call seriously. We should consider this an opportunity, and we have to be in dialogue on this issue, Matt. We have to take charge, take the offensive, not simply play defense and react to what the administration does. We have to go proactively and delegitimize the case the administration is trying to build, the bogus and very dangerous case they're trying to build in a lead-up to a potential war on Iran.
I'm Matt Rothschild. I've been speaking with Danny Postal, author of Reading a Legitimation Crisis in Tehran, Iran and the Future of Liberalism. Danny, where do people go for more information about what's going on in Iran, what the democratic movement in Iran is all about? How would a listener educate himself or herself on this issue?
Well, my editors would be disappointed if I didn't plug Open Democracy, but truly, I would say opendemocracy.net has some of the best sources in the English language on what's happening in Iran. We have a whole section called Iran, How to Avoid War, and another section called Iran and Democracy. So I strongly suggest to listeners that they check out opendemocracy.net. Also, the wonderful magazine Marip, the Middle East Report, which can be found online. The current issue of the magazine is a special issue on Iran with some excellent articles about the situation. There's also Iranian.com. And there are excellent articles about Iran on The Guardian, The Independent, and The New Statesman as well.
So there's plenty of information out there for listeners to go access and then to act on. And I think the message of your book is that we need to be aware of what's going on in Iran and not just look at it through an anti-imperial lens, but because sometimes that rhetoric is just matching up with the right-wingers in Iran, but we have to ally with the democracy movement there, even as we oppose this imminent threat of a bombing from Washington.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I consider myself an anti-imperialist. Let me be very clear about that. What I'm criticizing in my book, Matt, is not anti-imperialism, but what I call tunnel vision anti-imperialism, which is when anti-imperialism becomes such an all-consuming prism that it's the only issue, the only way we look at issues in the world. And so if you look at Iran, for example, through the prism purely of anti-imperialism, you don't understand that it's actually in some ways the Iranian right, not the left, that uses the rhetoric of anti-imperialism, which is not to say that Iranian progressives are pro-imperialist either, but it's just not the centerpiece of their analysis.
Danny Postal, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thanks, Matt.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by MUFA. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.